Hello, and welcome to the Women's Hour. I'm Kelly Pyle, your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. Today's show features articles from both the June 2nd and June 10th editions of People Magazine, as well as Oprah Daily. Some of these stories include The Pride and Power of Pop Culture, Hoda Kotb Living for the Small Things, and How to Marie Kondo Your Life Before You Die. The Power and Pride of Pop Culture, 40 Years of LGBTQ Plus Milestones. For the LGBTQ Plus community, 1985 marked a major turning point. The launch of the groundbreaking organization GLAAD helped push queer culture out of the shadows and into clearer focus. This Pride Month, people celebrate some of the key moments of the past four decades. In 1985, a group of New Yorkers was dissatisfied with how the media was covering the AIDS crisis. With that pivotal acknowledgement of the threat of misinformation in the LGBTQ plus community and the media's potential to be a positive influence, they founded the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. Now, 40 years later, GLAAD and the media have taken many steps forward. Ellen's coming out, Will and Grace, those were tectonic shifts in the acceptance of LGBTQ people that were done through TV, bringing our stories into people's homes, says GLAAD President and CEO Sarah Kate Ellis. The organization worked behind the scenes with Hollywood to make sure LGBTQ plus representation on screen was fair and accurate. Tom Hanks in Philadelphia, a straight actor who was willing to move into that space, was a huge moment, Ellis says. So was Laverne Cox on the cover of Time. GLAAD was there advocating for representation on screen and in the real world, in bookstores, video stores, and even the yellow pages, where they pushed for LGBTQ plus sections. Queer stories soared, and we were entertained and moved, whether laughing at Jack's antics on Will and Grace, crying through Brokeback Mountain, or being inspired by queer artists from RuPaul to Chappelle Roan. As we watched, we identified. As we identified, our hearts moved and our minds opened. Says Ellis, our visibility is our greatest strength as a community. On these pages, we revisit the moments and stars that changed everything. RuPaul ascended to the A-list. RuPaul's Drag Race premiered in 2009, pushing drag solidly into the mainstream, and eventually making RuPaul Charles, 64, who had already scored the 1992 club classic supermodel, You Better Work, his own VH1 talk show, and a Tony, a 14-time Emmy winner. For Jinx Monsoon, who won Drag Race in 2013 and an All-Star season in 2022, Ru's legacy is showing the world that hitting a runway in hair, makeup, and heels isn't hiding, she says. It's bringing the best parts out. It's putting the inside on the outside. Currently starring on Broadway in Pirates, the Penzance musical, Monsoon is one of hundreds of drag queens who've catapulted to success via RuPaul's franchise, which is as enlightening as it is entertaining. So much good reverberates out from Drag Race, she says. William Hurt became the first person to win the Best Actor Oscar for playing a gay character in the 1985 film Kiss of the Spider-Woman. For a man of his stature and his positioning at that time to play such a deviant, and I put that in quotes because to me it's just a lived experience and it's a human experience. It was seen as radical, ground-shaking, says Tana 232, who stars as the same character, a gay prisoner in Argentina named Luis Molina, in the upcoming musical adaptation opposite Jennifer Lopez. It created space for our community on a major platform that I think our film is doing in a different way, that feels more timely and taking advantage of some of the privileges that we have in 2025. Ryan Phillippe debuted on One Life to Live as Billy Douglas, the first gay teenager on a daytime soap, in 1992. It was really a profound experience, says Phillippe, 50, of one of his first screen roles, which he landed at age 17. I was so young that there were elements of me that were afraid because it was such a different time. But we got feedback almost instantaneously from kids who were saying, I've never seen someone represent me in any entertainment before in my life. And from parents who said, watching this show on my lunch break gave me a way to connect with my LGBTQ child. As that job progressed, I realized how important it was to some people. In 1994, Wilson Cruz became the first openly gay actor to play an openly gay character on TV with the premiere of My So-Called Life. I'm proud to have been the first, and even more proud to not have been the last, Cruz, 51, says. It's always amazing to be remembered for something as special as this. Ricky Vasquez is a very important person in my life and always will be. Will and Grace, a groundbreaking sitcom featuring two gay main characters, debuted on NBC on September 21, 1998. The trailblazing series paved the path for future TV comedies, populated by prominent LGBTQ plus characters and actors, including Modern Family, Schitt's Creek, Abbott Elementary, Mid-Century Modern, and Overcompensating. I feel like I was so blessed to have Quinta Brunson from The Jump say, we're going to introduce this aspect of this character, and it's not going to be what defines the character. Chris Perfetti, 36, says of the matter-of-fact sexual orientation of Jacob, his character on Abbott Elementary, the ABC sitcom created by Brunson. Anybody that's shocked by queer people in America or queer teachers needs to wake up. It's 2025. The personal makeover show Queer Eye for the Straight Guy helped put Bravo, future home of the Real Housewives franchise, on the map in 2003. It feels surreal, and I'm overwhelmed with gratitude, says Jonathan Van Ness, 38, who stars on Queer Eye, the reboot Netflix launched in 2018 of the enduring success of the series. I see queer leaders coming into themselves every single day. I see so many people in our community rising up, fulfilling our dreams, and being who we are. And I think that's probably what queer joy and queer resistance is really all about. The L Word, a drama about a circle of lesbian friends, premiered on Showtime on January 18, 2004. that show really helped change the perception of what the public thought about the lesbian community. And it took a preconceived idea and spun it for the better because it opened people's eyes, says Kate Moaning, 47, who played Shane and who co-authored the new book, So Gay for Your Friendship, Found Family, and the Show That Started It All, with co-star Leisha Haley, who played Alice. Adds Haley, it's still not just the first of its kind, but it still remains the only show like itself. Brokeback Mountain, a western about two closeted gay men, played by Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal, hit theaters on December 9, 2005. The Best Picture Oscar nominee kicked off a wave of Oscar-nominated dramas with LGBTQ+ characters and love stories, including Milk, A Single Man, Carol, Moonlight, Call Me By Your Name, Rustin, and Amelia Perez. The 1982 film Making Love, about a husband who has an affair with another man, broke ground for all of them decades earlier, though it proved to be too much too soon. When I took the Making Love role, I knew it was going to be controversial on some level, says Harry Hamlin, 73, who played the other man. But I was unaware of how controversial, of how shocking it was going to be, not only to audiences, but critics also. Decades later, he adds, the world has changed. It's 180 degrees since then. Poe's star, Billy Porter, became the first openly gay black man to win an Emmy for lead actor in a drama series in 2019. I may be the first, and I do not want to be the last, says Porter, who played Master of Ceremonies, Pray Tell, on the acclaimed series. We've come a long way, but there is so much farther to go. I would like to live in a world where black queer firsts are not a thing anymore. I'm a dreamer. Maybe someday. Lesbian singer-songwriter Chappell Roan won the Best New Artist Grammy on February 2, 2025. The Missouri native became a pop sensation with her breakout 2024 queer-themed single, Good Luck Babe, which hit number 4 on Billboard's Hot 100 and beat out other rising stars like Sabrina Carpenter, Shaboozy, Doey Chai, and Benson Boone for the coveted honor, previously won by Boy George and Culture Club in 1984 and Sam Smith in 2015. She's an amazing songwriter and performer, says Leisha Haley, who was one half of the alt-pop duo The Murmurs in the 90s. Sometimes you just get one or the other, but when you get the whole package deal, there's no stopping that. You've been listening to The Power and Pride of Pop Culture from People Magazine. 2 years after his death, Paul Rubens, also known as Pee Wee Herman, gets the final word. I want to set the record straight. In a new documentary, filmed while he was dying of cancer, Rubens opens up about his early life, comes out as gay, and defends himself against career-crippling allegations of child pornography. By Lizzie Hyman. This is from People Magazine. For more than 40 hours in 2023, Paul Rubens sat down for a series of one-on-one interviews, candidly recounting the highs and lows of his decades-spanning career. It wasn't always easy. There were creative disagreements, and real concerns that his story, particularly his arrest and misdemeanor charge for possessing materials depicting children in a sexual manner, might not be told the right way. Still, the actor, best known for his iconic alter ego Pee-wee Herman, chose to trust the process and committed to one final interview. Just 1 week before it was set to take place, Rubens died. I had no reason to believe that Paul was contemplating his mortality, says director Matt Wolff, who conducted the interviews unaware that Rubens had privately been battling lung cancer for 6 years. I found out that Paul died on Instagram along with everybody else. Shortly after Rubens' death, his assistant contacted Wolff and shared a recording the late star had made the day before he died on July 30th, 2023, at age 70, his final words to the world. That recording, combined with the deeply personal interviews and archival footage, forms the emotional core of Pee-wee as Himself, a new two-part docuseries premiering May 23rd on HBO. I want to set the record straight. Rubens, his voice weak and unsteady, said on the tape, which is played at the end of the film, "More than anything, the reason I wanted to make a documentary was to let people see who I really am and how painful and difficult it was to be labeled something that I wasn't, a pedophile. I wanted somehow for people to understand that my whole career, everything I did and wrote, was based in love." Pee-wee Herman was born from a harmonica and a noisy neighbor. "I had a little tiny harmonica that said Pee-wee on it. And I knew this kid when I was little who was this crazy, really loud, nutty kid. And his last name was Herman." Rubens, who was born Paul Rubenfeld in upstate New York and grew up in Sarasota, Florida, recalled in the docuseries, "I thought Pee-wee Herman sounds so weird that it sounds real. If you were making up a name, wouldn't you make a better name than that?" Although the character started to take shape in 1978 during a scene night with the LA comedy troupe, The Groundlings, Rubens said Pee-wee was the result of a whole bunch of disconnected moments finally coming together. While he had always loved performing, it was during his time at the California Institute of the Arts that Rubens began exploring alternative forms of creativity. "Performance art spoke to me. Sitting in the dorm at 2 a.m. in drag, just hanging out," he recalls. "Doing drag and passing, I can draw a line from that to having an alter ego and being successful in having that character pass as a real person." Though Rubens never publicly came out as gay, Wolff said it was something the comedian had always intended to do. "It was a decision he had made, but one he was very ambivalent and anxious about," Wolff explains. In the docuseries, Rubens detailed a long-term, very serious relationship right out of college with a man named Guy. They lived together and shared a cat, and Rubens credited the romance as a major source of inspiration for his comedy. "I looked across the room and saw someone and fell in love instantly," he said. "I just went, that's him, that's the guy." But becoming part of a couple meant giving up a part of himself. And when the relationship ended, Rubens made two decisions: to hide his sexuality and to forego future romantic relationships. "I was as out as you can be, and then I went back in the closet," he said. "My career absolutely would have suffered if I was openly gay. So I went to great lengths for many, many years to keep it a secret." During the 1980s and 90s, Rubens achieved everything he had dreamed of. After unsuccessfully auditioning for Saturday Night Live, a spot he lost to Gilbert Gottfried, as they were both the nerds in the group, he began performing an act he called the Pee Wee Herman Show to sold-out crowds. Its success led to the 1985 hit Pee Wee's Big Adventure and the Emmy-winning 1986 to 1990 children's TV series Pee Wee's Playhouse. Rubens became a cultural icon as Pee Wee Herman, even receiving a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame in 1988 under the name of his alter ego, a testament to both the character's impact and Rubens' determination to separate himself from his creation. He was a private man who wanted people to believe Pee Wee was a real person, Wolf says. That was his performance art. But even behind the safety of an alter ego, Rubens learned he couldn't hide forever. "If I was conflicted about sexuality, fame was so much more complicated," he reflected. "By the time I realized you trade in anonymity and privacy for success, the ink had dried on my pact with the devil." Rubens' 1991 arrest for indecent exposure at an adult theater in Sarasota became what he would later call a giant footnote in his life. "It really backfired when I got arrested and people had never seen a photo of me other than as Pee Wee Herman. And then all of a sudden, I had a Charlie Manson mugshot," he said. "It's shocking what hideous, horrible, mean stuff people say and think about me." After years spent retreating from the spotlight and rebuilding his brand, Rubens faced more controversy in 2001 when police raided his home while he was away filming Elton John's "This Train Don't Stop There Anymore" music video. Authorities seized his collection of vintage homoerotic art, including materials they categorized as child pornography. Rubens insisted it was not, and eventually pled guilty to a lesser obscenity charge. The charges led to 3 years on the sex offender registry, a consequence Rubens endured with quiet anguish. "When he would discuss his arrest with me, he said the overwhelming feeling was shock," Wolf recalls. "From my point of view, it was incredibly unjust. So it was easy for me to lay it out all clearly so that people could collectively recognize he had been mistreated." Wolf related to Rubens in a new way after his death. "In rewatching footage and rereading 1,500 pages of transcripts, he came to better understand Rubens, the significance of his words, and the complexity of the man behind the character. He was someone who was super intense and could be very uncompromising, but also someone who had done a lot of work on himself and was always striving to do better, whether it was with his work or his personal life," Wolf says. "He had an enormous impact on the world, but in some ways, had never been given full credit for his accomplishments. Even if he didn't receive that credit, Rubens took great pride in staying true to himself through Pee-wee. Nothing would stop me. Nothing would deter me. It would be pure in every way, Rubens said of the character. Part of why I feel so proud of it is I delivered that. I lived up to that not just for you, but for myself. How Paul Rubens became Pee-wee Herman. Rubens had big dreams as a child. With the support of his dad, who built a stage in their basement for performances, he honed his craft at the California Institute of the Arts, where he changed his name from Paul Rubenfeld to Paul Rubens. After graduating in 1973, he sent his picture all over town for roles and joined improv troupes. By the late 70s, an alter ego and future star was born. I felt like I had some kind of little superpower where I can move people, he said. I can cause a reaction. Early promise. Rubens in 1970 was named most talented his senior year at Sarasota High School in Florida. Creative awakenings. After graduating, Rubens attended Boston University before enrolling at Cal Arts, where he tweaked his original surname. A work in progress. Rubens developed his style in clubs and in multiple gong show appearances. Getting closer. Rubens started working on his Pee-wee persona as a member of the comedy troupe, The Groundlings. Hello, Pee-wee. I thought, this character is perfect, Rubens said in 1980 of Pee-wee. There was such a full circle about it. This has been I Want to Set the Record Straight from People Magazine. You are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer broadcaster, Kelly Pyle, and this is the Women's Hour. All about Billy Joel's rare brain condition and what it means for his future by Jeff Nelson from People. Billy Joel was gearing up for a historic summer, set to become the first singer to play concerts at all three New York City area stadiums in the same season. The music icon was forced to press pause on those plans due to a private health crisis. On May 23rd, Joel, 76, announced he would be canceling all scheduled concerts, while revealing in a statement to People that he was recently diagnosed with normal pressure hydrocephalus, NPH, a brain condition caused by excess cerebrospinal fluid buildup in the brain ventricles that can affect memory, movement, and concentration. I'm sincerely sorry to disappoint our audience, and thank you for understanding, Joel said. The Piano Man singer has faced health struggles publicly in recent months, and his NPH revelation comes after he suffered an onstage fall at a concert in Connecticut in February, causing concerns among fans. By March, he had postponed shows through June. Joel's condition has been exacerbated by recent performances, leading to problems with hearing, vision, and balance, the statement said, adding that he is undergoing physical therapy specifically for his diagnosis and looks forward to the day when he can once again take the stage. Joel's family including his daughter, singer Alexa Ray, 39, with ex Christy Brinkley, have rallied around the Grammy winner throughout the ordeal. On May 26th, his fourth wife, Alexis, 43, gave an update on his condition. "We are so grateful for the wonderful care and swift diagnosis we received," she captioned in a smiley Instagram photo with her daughters Della, with their daughters Della 9 and Remy 7. "We are hopeful for his recovery." For now, Joel is following his doctor's orders and refraining from performing, and is fully committed to prioritizing his health as he focuses on getting better, the statement added. "He is happiest while performing. Music is, has been, and will always be his life," says a music industry insider. "He's not ready to retire." Indeed, a source close to Joel adds, "He is not retiring and hopes to be able to resume performing as his recovery progresses." With additional reporting by Linda Marks, this is from People magazine, all about Billy Joel's rare brain condition and what it means for his future. Living for the small things. 5 months after leaving the Today Show, the former anchor opens up about weathering her daughter Hope's diabetes diagnosis and relishing their joyful new life. By Charlotte Triggs. Photographs by Brian Dobin. This is a People exclusive. Hoda Kotb's last day on the Today Show, January 10th, was an emotional one. "From the minute I walked into 30 Rock that day to the minute I walked out, it's like this beautiful parade of people were there. Mariah Shriver came out, Simone Biles came out, Andy Cohen, Kathy Lee Gifford, Jimmy Fallon. And you know what I remember about it all? I remember my heart breaking," she says now, sitting in the living room of her cozy, all-white home in suburban Westchester County, New York. "When you say goodbye to something you love, even though it's right, it's like your heart's broken and on display." When the cameras stopped rolling at 11 a.m., and the cast and crew and Kotb's friends all from all facets of her life descended onto the stage to send her off with a glass of champagne, her co-host, Jenna Bush Hager, burst into tears. Kotb's daughters, Haley, 8, and Hope, 6, also joined her on set. And Haley was concerned. She goes, "I'm worried about Jenna," Kotb recalls. "Jenna was holding and rocking her, and Haley was just there looking like she was protecting Jenna. Some things can be super sad and super beautiful, and that's what that was." It's been 5 years since Kotb walked away from one of the most coveted spots in broadcasting. And in that time, she's been settling into a new life, relishing the amount of time she has for her daughters and making plans for the future. When someone erases your schedule and says, "Okay, here you go, have fun," you're sitting there going, "Oh my gosh, what am I supposed to be doing right now?" says Kotb, 60. "On the first day, I was scribbling in my journal and feeling a little off. There was a big, huge full moon, and it was so bright in my office. It was like a light was on. I still remember looking up, and Haley scampered down the stairs and jumped in my lap. She looked at me and she goes, 'You really are here.' It was really, really beautiful." Kotb also hasn't stopped working. She still hosts her podcast, Making Space, with Hoda Kotb. she continued to lead public Q&A events with female leaders like Maria Shriver and Melinda French Gates, and she will begin contributing one piece a month for the Today Show starting this month. She's also been hard at work launching a wellness company, Joy 101, complete with an app, live events, and a subscription newsletter that will all center on themes of joy, mindfulness, meditation, and wellness. But it's the small things that have been filling her days with the most joy. It's really cool to just realize that there's so much more to life, she says. I wasn't able to bear witness to my kids' daily lives because of what I was doing. I got to see Haley sing What a Wonderful World at 9:15 a.m. I would have missed that. I used to think life was the big things, but it really is all the stuff that happens in between. Being there for large things or small has been critically important for Kotbe as the family has navigated her younger daughter Hope's medical condition over the past 2 years. In February 2023, a sudden onset of mysterious symptoms landed Hope in the hospital for 2 weeks and forced Kotbe to take a leave of absence from the Today Show. Now that the family has established a care routine that's working, Kotbe reveals that Hope is living with type 1 diabetes, an autoimmune disease that prevents the pancreas from making insulin, requiring vigilant blood sugar monitoring and frequent insulin injections. It's kind of constant care for Hope. We're monitoring her 24/7, says Kotbe, who calls her daughter a trooper for the way she's dealing with the unpleasant realities of treatment. She was getting shots, 4 or 5 a day, every day for a year. Now she's getting them less frequently because we have some other means to get her what she needs. But there's a lot to it. Some kids can have sweets and she can't. If she's up in the night, we have to take care of her at night. After a pause, Kotbe adds, she is a happy, healthy, rambunctious, amazing kid, and we have to watch her. Diabetes is a part of her, but not all of her. I hope it shapes her, but never defines her. Being able to be totally available for her daughter became a non-negotiable, Kotbe says, something that was not possible when she was locked into a long-term contract for a job that had hard deadlines and call times on the Today set and a daily wake-up at 3:15 a.m. I really wanted to and needed to be here to watch over her. So whenever she needs anything, it can happen at night multiple times. I'm up, she says. But I would never, ever want Hope to one day grow up and say, oh, my mom left her job because of me. It wasn't that alone. But if you look at it cumulatively, it was a part of that decision. Kotbe says it's also been a transition to help big sister Haley understand why so much of mom's attention is going to Hope. I think anybody who has one child who has immediate needs, sometimes you have to really work on it to emotionally support the other. And I'm actually trying to figure it out, Kotbe says. The girls will sometimes squabble and play fight over who mom loves most. I just need to make sure that Haley feels seen and loved. I keep telling them my heart's ability to expand is beyond measure. Now that she is working from home, Kotbe jokes there's a split verdict on having mom available all the time. I think that on some days they love it, And sometimes I think I might be cramping their style a little bit, because they were used to a morning routine minus me, she says. I still feel like I'm learning how to be a calmer mother, and I want to be that mom for them, so I'm still a work in progress there. But for Kotbi, it's heaven. She wakes up at 4:30, her version of sleeping in, after years of an even worse schedule, meditates, and writes in her journal before the girls get up. After walking her kids to school in a big neighborhood group, Kotbi sometimes hits the gym or heads for a tennis lesson, a new hobby, before zeroing in on work plans. Afternoons are filled with an array of after-school activities, from bracelet making to field hockey for Haley and lacrosse for Hope. In between, I pick up my guitar a lot more just because I can, Kotbi says. I go on walks with the other moms from the burbs here after dinner, and I love that. Things I didn't do before because I was too tired. She's been into the city and back at her old Rockefeller Center, stomping ground a few times since leaving today. Every time I walk in, I feel warm and fuzzy, says Kotbi. It's not like when you break up with someone and you're like, oh God, there he is. I don't feel that. I want to see everybody. And look, the pictures are now Craig and Savannah. I like looking at them. Seeing her old colleagues does inspire a wistful feeling for Kotbi. I just had coffee with Savannah a little more than a week ago, and we sat across from each other, and in that 1 hour we laughed, we cried, we held hands. She shared all this personal stuff, and I did too. And she asked me, tell me what it's like on the other side, Kotbi recalls. And I said, I'll tell you what I miss. I miss this. I miss walking in a room and having an instant daily connection that you don't have to put on a calendar. I saw Savannah and Jenna every day without fail, and we shared our lives. It's so funny. It's not the work part of it, but I miss that a lot. It's like an empty space for me. That feeling is mutual. I've missed her giggle so much, says Guthrie. She could really walk in a room, giggle, and everything in the world just fades away. But for Kotbi, nothing can replace the feeling of seeing her children totally relaxed, knowing mom is not going anywhere. Sometimes I'm right there working in my office, and they'll run up to the window and wave to me and throw up a heart with their hands. They're fine because they want me to be here. They're just happy to see me, and then they'll go off and play, she says. And at night, with no more call times, the girls cuddle up on either side of Kotbi in bed. I sleep in the middle, so there's no rolling over, and it is not my favorite sleeping position. But when I wake up and they're both nuzzled into me, I'm thinking to myself like, oh my gosh, look at me. I get to lay here with these two kids, and all they want to do is be as close to me as they can get. Inside her new venture. When Jenna Bush Hager turned her on to breath work and meditation to combat stress, Kotbi says she couldn't get enough. It was really working for me, but I was online obsessively looking for different programs and info, and I couldn't find it. So I decided, let's make that. Welcome to Joy 101, an app that offers targeted programs and resources, as well as live wellness events and a subscription newsletter. As part of her Joy Collective, experts across different fields will offer in-app materials and lessons. It's like a retreat in your pocket, Cotby says. The luxury of time. She's still working, of course, but with a little more free time, Cotby has been playing tennis and practicing the guitar. She even sang Landslide for the People crew. She's also been enjoying hanging out with the other moms and getting to know her neighbors. The moms here treat me like them, which I love, she says. Last day on set. Cotby's last day on the Today Show wasn't the end of her friendships. She still calls or texts me at 5 a.m., Bush Hager says. This morning she said, "Business is fun. Who knew?" So she's really loving this next chapter. Adds Guthrie, "She's happiest when she's with her kids." Cotby will also begin making one guest appearance a month on Today and will help cover the Winter Olympics in Milan. With additional reporting by Alex Ross, you've been listening to Hoda Kotb, Living for the Small Things, a People Magazine exclusive. How to Marie Kondo Your Life Before You Die. Follow these simple tips to prevent catastrophic family fights once you're gone. By Cassie Hurwitz, published June 4th, 2025. This is from Oprah Daily. There's such comfort in having tangible things in your life. Family photos, mementos from travels, dog-eared books. These items turn a house into a home. But what happens to the ornament collection and deluxe Scrabble set after you die? Your kids, grandkids, nieces, and friends have to sort through it. Unless you do it yourself, so they don't have to. Just like we uncovered in our guide to creating a will, planning for your death is the greatest gift you can give your loved ones. The time after somebody dies is a whirlwind, says Chanel Reynolds, creator of Get Your Shit Together, a site that offers estate planning help, and author of What Matters Most. Your brain is just trying to chug through the day and not make critical decisions. The friends and family you leave behind will be grieving and forcing them to decide who should be saddled with your china or toy soldier collection just isn't fair. It's understandably overwhelming, so we've laid out easy steps for clearing out odds and ends now, designating who gets what later, and making it all legal. Start with 1 hour. When first thinking about decluttering or designating valuables, you might walk into your basement or storage room and think, "I can't even deal with this," Reynolds says. That's why she recommends an exercise to narrow down what's important. If you had 1 hour before the aliens attacked, what things would be most important to you? Digital files, wedding photos, she asks. Take some time to jot these down before you start the process. They can be items of financial value, generational versus, and emotional value. Next, put your Marie Kondo or Swedish death cleaning hat on. Surely you know Kondo's mantra by now. If it doesn't spark joy, get rid of it. That's one harsh way to 86 the stuff that didn't make it on your important list. A more forgiving approach is Swedish death cleaning, the process of gradually shedding your stuff before you die. In addition to thinking about what brings you joy, acknowledge what's important or useful to you. three vacuums that all work well, we both know you need only one. Our belongings have a life cycle, says Regina Lark, a professional organizer. It's human nature to hold on to possessions, but we often hang on to things that are no longer useful in the hopes that they'll be useful once again. In reality, no one needs an iPhone 10 charger anymore. We don't allow the thing to serve its purpose and move on. Instead, these pieces should be donated, given to friends and family, sold, or tossed. Everything has value to the person who wants it, Lark adds, noting that she's seen people buy half-full bottles of cleaning supplies. One exception, old papers. Please, for the love of Marie Kondo, shred those pay stubs from 1992. Two other tips. Enlist someone to roll up their sleeves and help you, and set a timer. Lark recommends a professional organizer, friends and family, or even a task rabbit just to have extra hands working through the clutter by your side. Giving yourself a time restriction will curb the desire to start flipping through the old yearbooks and photo albums. Tell yourself you can go back and reminisce after the 10-year-old wedding invitations have been sorted. Then gather your friends and family to go through the valuables. This process can be a doozy. Many a family has been ripped apart over who gets the KitchenAid mixer or diamond earrings. That's why your being a part of the conversation is of the utmost importance. It ensures that everyone is on the same page. People might disagree, and that's okay, Reynolds says, but leaving the least amount of elbow room or confusion is the best way to minimize fighting. You can take a page out of my mom's book. She sat everyone down on Thanksgiving morning and detailed her estate plan. It's a morbid start to a holiday, but it's also a rare time when the clan is all together. It can be casual, Reynolds says. You might just say, I was thinking you would have those things, and your brother would have these. How does that work? They're free to agree, disagree, or make an addendum that they also want the antique teapot set or a certain painting. In this scenario, the kids could also take a tour through their parents' stuff and take turns earmarking what they want. We're not opposed to using color-coded sticky notes as an organizational system. If you anticipate tension or conflict, remember this. People are either going to be upset about it while you're alive, or they're going to be upset about it when you're gone, says Laura Cowan, an estate planning attorney in New York City. At least doing it while you're alive can put some legal protections in place. More on that later. One fun way to make it equitable if the sticky note situation won't work. Play a state lottery, which Lark once did with a family of 9 siblings after their parents had passed. One of the 9 was contentious. So every day for 6 weeks, we spun a wheel to select one of the kids, and they got to pick some items they wanted. Let's say you have one big ticket item, like a piano or a vintage car. The musician or F1 fan can have that as long as the other offspring receives something of an equivalent value. That might be more of your smaller belongings or extra money in their inheritance once you have that item appraised. For the big sibling rivalries, having a professional mediator in the room is a good idea. It could be a therapist, a neutral third party, or a professional organizer to keep things on track. Finally, put it all in writing. If you don't have documentation, people are going to have different recollections, and there's going to be fighting, Cowan says. There are two options for making these wishes legal. One is adding everything directly to the gift category of your will. The other is creating a personal property memorandum, which is a different document that lives outside of your will, Cowan says. The memorandum is legal in only about half of U.S. states, though, so it's safest to work with an estate attorney when picking which document to use. A personal property memorandum can be kept at home and updated on your own. Just sign and date it, and be sure to shred any old versions. You still need to let your attorney know you've created this document so they can mention it in your will. If the memorandum isn't legal in your state, you have to go through your lawyer to update the designations in your will. It can be costly and annoying, so one option is to keep a personal property memorandum, signed and dated, at home that you can update with the minutia. Every year or so, transfer that information into your will if you can afford it. The bottom line is to be as specific as possible. You don't have to itemize every sock, but list the belongings that have value in some way. And be clear about which couch. Don't just say my favorite. The rest is up to you. You could designate all your clothes for charity or your kitchen items for a women's shelter. Whatever it is, don't leave your family to play guess who. This has been How to Marie Kondo Your Life Before You Die from Oprah Daily. Thank you for joining us today for the Women's Hour. My name is Kelly Pyle, and I am your Sun Sounds of Arizona volunteer broadcaster. I hope you enjoyed the fun stories in our program today, and that you'll also make plans to join us next week for another interesting collection of women's magazine articles. And don't forget, you can take Sun Sounds with you. You can stream as well as access shows on demand on our Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones. Have a great day, and be sure to stay tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona.